Momo, I have spent the entire morning with you. The entire morning.
Have you?
It feels like the entire morning, yeah. Because I read your magnum opus.
It was not that long.
On the shutdown of the NBA 1 year ago today.
Yeah.
The shutdown, for all intents and purposes, of the world 1 year ago today. And it is really, now this is going to be third hand. Lindsay told me that on Cleveland radio, Brian Windhorst said, it seems like 5 years and it seems like 5 minutes, which is actually a really good way to describe it. I mean, it feels like yesterday and yet it seems like forever ago that this actually went down. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, totally. I mean, it's like, you know, what are dog years? 7 years of a human's life, right? It's sort of like, what are quarantine years? You know, it's like, in a way, it feels like I remember even, you know, cause it starts coming up in my phone or my Facebook memories or Instagram memories or whatever. And like the first few months of it were very different. Like we had these different stages of quarantine, right? And now I think we're all gotten our little bit more of a groove. Like you kind of know how to do the stay at home stuff. You know, even just seeing that video of you, there's a video on ESPN LA's Twitter handle just a minute ago where you're like dressed up really nice.
Yeah.
A year to the day of when you and Slee were on the air and this all went down. And it was like, oh man, remember when we used to get dressed up?
remember when we wore clothes?
Yeah.
I still do.
Jorge still does.
I still do. Oh, I mean, I got to come to the studio every day. So somebody asked me, like, how did it change for you? I'm like, what changed? I still have the same drive and nothing changed. I still dress up.
But do
up
you
or
dress
try to.
As nicely or do you?
Yeah,
do you...
I mean, I don't come in my sandals, my chanclas or my sweats, you know, like I have to dress my, you know.
But who are you going to see? Like, who are you trying to impress?
You want to be? You want me to be honest? I put up a little happy face on the wall with the thumbtacks. I call him Wilson. He's my Wilson. So he gets to see
me. Wilson!
I'll post a picture of it. I'll show you guys.
Amazing.
Wilson!
I mean,
great
Castaway
reference.
I have to go to the studio a couple of times. You know, every once in a while I do a around the horn or something there.
Yes.
But I literally do not see people. Like I walk in, I see the security guard, but I feel like we got a basis. They're not going to judge if I'm wearing. I literally wear sandals. I've got sweats on. I look professional from the waist up. Like,
right.
Like I look like I have a nice shirt on and I have hair and makeup done by myself, not from a makeup artist. And it looks better than I do now. Right now I am in shorts, no shoes, and a Seattle Supersonics t-shirt.
Oh, I mean, F it. I mean, I'm wearing a Rams hoodie and shorts and the only time I put on shoes is when I go for a walk. I mean, I'm barefoot most of the time. So, yeah, I mean, the world has changed. And I remember the unbelievable drama of that night. And the way it went down for me and Sliwa, or Spock, as we like to call him.
So good.
The way it went down for me and Spock was that John Ireland left at the normal time. He left at 6:15. And I was like, well, wait a minute. They're holding up this Oklahoma City, Utah game. Something's going on. I'm just going to stay on the air with Sliwa. So it was me and Sliwa, and we got word about 6:30 that night. Somebody comes rushing out onto the floor. And Momo, you take it from there because you know the details of all
this. Yeah, so I thought what was amazing is in just reconstructing this from all the people who were in those rooms is, you know, the Thunder and the Jazz were aware that Rudy Gobert had gone to the Oklahoma University Medical Center earlier that day for a COVID test. And he had not been feeling well. He had gone through a couple of symptoms. They'd gone through a checklist and, you know, he had a fever. He had this. But the bigger tip off was that they had tested him for flu A and B and some other upper respiratory infections, and those had all come back negative. And
right.
He had the sort of telltale signs that we all know now, which is dry cough, fever above 100, you know, et cetera. So they sent him to OU, and at the time, do you remember back when testing was a thing? Like,
you
couldn't get a test. And so, but the NBA had set up a set of protocols for if anybody, whether it's your player or a visiting player, had symptoms, like that you have a lab and you have public health officials to go to so that you can get a test really quick.
Yep.
And he goes to OU Medical Center, gets the test, and they're just waiting on the test all day. So there were some people during the day that were aware that there were, it wasn't necessarily Rudy, but that it, and I think they actually had tested Emmanuel Mudiay too, but he came back positive for some other upper respiratory infection or maybe the flu or something. But that this was a possibility during the day. So the test comes back literally 10, 15 minutes before the game. And the governor of Oklahoma, Kevin Stitt, happened to be at the game. And he was there because of a business meeting he had with another company. He was just there because of, like, his commerce secretary had said, you know, can you go to the game and meet with these guys? So he's there. He gets a call from the public health officials in Oklahoma City and said, hey, we have a Jazz player who's tested positive. And immediately the governor goes and gets Clay Bennett, the owner of the Thunder, and Sam Presti and Rob Hennigan, that's the front office of the Thunder. And they huddle up in this conference room. They call Adam Silver. And he's on the line with Rick Buchanan, who's their chief legal counsel. He's literally sitting outside his apartment in Manhattan on the phone, like, okay, this is not a drill. In other words, I think that's what the biggest takeaway we all had was, this is not a drill. This is real now. Right. And they, within 10 minutes, they make the decision, we got to postpone this game. But that's not so easy. There's people on the court. There's 18,000 fans in the stand. How do you get these people to leave without causing a panic? Have people already been exposed? Like, there was all of these questions that still needed to be answered. And so they did, I thought, a pretty remarkable job of, you know, telling the fans, it's, you know, time to go home. You're not in any danger. It's just, we're not going to play
tonight. Game has been postponed.
Right. And that was terrifying because at that point we all realized how little we knew. Was this, yep, was the virus airborne? I mean, Gobert was not at the arena. He was in his hotel room, but he had been around the Jazz.
Sure.
And they had been on the court, and there's all these videos of them, you know, the little ball boy coming up to Donovan Mitchell, and you're like, oh, you know, I mean, we did not know at the time how transmissible the virus really was. We just didn't know anything. I mean, I don't even think masks were like prevalent at that point.
Right. No, they were not. People were not wearing masks.
No, we were just washing our hands a lot.
I mean, it was all, it's weird because this was a moment when, and this often happens with sports, mm-hmm, it's a moment when the whole world wakes up because of an incident, yep, related to sports. And this, mm-hmm, was, technically, I was talking to Morales yesterday, Chris Morales, who's the guy you hear making funny stuff up at the beginning of, yep, every segment. He said that on the 19th was actually my last day in the studio, which meant that after Gobert, I still came in for another week. Now, John, wow, and Lindsay had shifted to home, but I, right, stayed in the studio thinking, well, I mean, I've got to do the show from the studio. I couldn't possibly do it from my house every day. And then, of, yeah, course, as of the 20th, I was at home and doing the show every single day. Mm-hmm. And up until now, for the last going on a year. But it's interesting that it was sports. It was sports and Tom Hanks that made it all real. It was, yeah, Rudy Gobert and Tom Hanks.
Yep. And I think that's how.
Wilson! That's Jorge's friend, Wilson.
You know, when we were looking back on this, you know, I asked Adam Silver the other day, hey, what, you know, why did we all knew this was out there. We saw the stories out of China. We saw the stories in Italy. We were seeing Dr. Fauci. He became starting to become a household name. Okay. Yep. And why did we not realize this was happened? How? And he goes, you know, there's this book by Ernest Becker. It's called The Denial of Death.
Yep.
And it's a famous book. I had to go look it up. It's, you know,
I read it. I think that was a fourth grade reading assignment.
Come on, man. Yeah, right.
Definitely was not fourth grade.
Yeah, but fourth grade. Point, I think, know, we read Denial of Death.
Yeah. The takeaway from that book is that we all know that there's these really scary things that can happen to us all day long, every, yeah, minute of every day. And somehow you have to just kind of shove that down and not think about it and compartmentalize so that you can go about your day, so that you can literally live your life without being in paralyzing fear. And I think that's what happened to all of us on March 11th. Like, we knew it was coming. We knew it was a threat. But as Adam Silver said, he goes, we'd seen other viruses. I mean, you heard about the Zika virus, and you heard about Ebola.
Bird flu and all those things.
Bird flu, swine flu.
And it, yeah, never seemed to ring home.
Yeah. I mean, it was something like you didn't want to get, but it felt very far away. Like, I never really was all that worried about Zika. You must have been worried because you went to Brazil.
I went to Brazil for the Olympics in 2000, whatever year that was. 16, I guess.
16.
Yeah, 16.
Were you scared?
I was not scared. I brought an unbelievable amount of mosquito repellent. I mean, like, an absurd amount. Like, the amount of mosquito repellent that would cause the airport to say, hey, you can't bring all this mosquito, all this liquid in your suitcase to Rio. What's weird is, so I get all worked up over it, and then I'm at the Rio Games, and I don't see a mosquito the entire time. I don't have a mosquito bite. I don't even see a mosquito anywhere. Wow. And I was all over. I went to I went to the what do they call the big guy? Christ the Redeemer.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to all of the gigantic sites and never ever saw a mosquito. So it was, and so that led to that factored into my idea about COVID. It's like, it's not coming here.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard about Zika. I lived through that. That was nothing. Certainly. COVID, or at that point it was the coronavirus, we said. Coronavirus isn't coming to the United States. And then the Gobert thing. And what's weird about the Gobert thing is he made that joke, that infamous joke where he went and touched everybody's microphone. Was that the day before?
I think it was the two days before.
2 days before, he said, look, I'm not afraid of the virus. And he touched every single microphone that was in front of him. And so it made it that was an infamous moment. Now, I don't think there's any – we'll always remember Rudy Gobert in association with coronavirus. That's permanent and that is forever. I don't think anybody really remembers the joke. I think he was – we were just as casual about it as he was at that point.
I remember doing Around the Horn that day on the 11th, and I came into the studio with you guys that day. I think I dropped by afterwards, and I remember when we talked about the Gobert, he had missed shoot around. You remember he was sick that next day?
Yeah.
And we did a whole segment on it, and it was like all we were really talking about was playing without fans. Like that felt major to play without fans. But when Rudy touched those mics and we heard like, hey, you know, Gobert's not practicing, he's feeling sick, and we all kind of were like, wait, what? Is that the guy who touched all the mics, you know? And at the time, we all kind of thought that, you know, if you remember, he did that because they had kicked the media out of the locker room. Remember, we were all going to be in press conferences as opposed to being in the locker room.
Yep.
And he did that almost in solidarity with the media. Like, hey, guys, don't worry about it. I'm not afraid of you. You know, like, let's not be afraid of this virus thing. It was actually a nice gesture on his part. You know, not exactly well executed, but it was meant as a nice gesture towards the media.
Right, sure.
And then the next day he's sick and missing shoot around. And we all were like, okay, like what's that? That couldn't be. And then when you found out it was actually Rudy Gobert that had tested positive for COVID, I mean, you could not have written that script more on the nose. There's
It was really, if you wrote it as a script, you would say that's too on the nose.
Yeah. On the nose. It would get a note from a studio executive saying come on.
I don't buy that.
Yeah.
I don't buy that the guy that touched all the microphones is the first guy to test positive for coronavirus. It's really incredible if you think about it.
Yeah.
Well, you got a little bit from Adam Silver talking about this coming up. Momo, you've got your big piece on ESPN.com. Then do you also have a 30 for 30 podcast?
Yeah, it was a 30 for 30. So what's cool about the 30 for 30, Mace, is it's not just the NBA. It's how the entire day started, which is it started off with the Harvey Weinstein trial. You remember that? I mean, that was a big story, and that was what we thought the day was going to be about, that, you know, the sentencing for him. And then, you know, we just go throughout the day and trace through how everything unfolded to even the end of the night when there was like other games that were going on that
right,
in the middle
the
of the
Dallas
game
where Mark Cuban was on the sidelines and didn't exactly know what to do.
Yeah. So we got lots of good voices. You know, there's Doris Burke, who, as we later learned, had coronavirus at that point and was starting to feel really sick. Scott Van Pelt, who was live on the air, just having to broadcast live in real time what was happening. You know, Royce Young, who was in the arena that night. You know, we almost couldn't let him leave. Billy Donovan, the coach. Jordan Clarkson, who was in the Jazz, you know, when they were all getting tested. I mean, there's a lot of good firsthand accounts in there from that crazy night and day. And also wrapping up what we all have later learned was just the beginning. Because I think at that point, nobody realized how long this would really last.
Yeah, exactly. All right, coming up next, a little bit from Adam Silver on that. Plus, Momo's dinner last night. You went out and did it big, and I've got a whole bunch of other restaurants that I want to talk about a little bit. That's coming up for you. Plus, when exactly did you lose confidence in Jared Goff? Can you pinpoint the moment where you lost confidence in Jared Goff? That's all coming up next for you. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Well done!
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
He did. He played for the Patriots, and we're having him on anyways. So, Momo, we've been talking about the one-year anniversary of the incident in Oklahoma City where Rudy Gobert tested positive. Got a couple of things to add to this. First of all, and this is, in retrospect, this is a really difficult job for a PA announcer.
Right.
But I want to play this and get your reaction as if you're somebody in the arena on the night this went down.
And fans, due to unforeseen circumstances, the game tonight has been postponed. You are all safe. And take your time in leaving the arena tonight and do so in an orderly fashion. Thank you for coming out tonight. We are all safe. And you can visit OKCThunder.com for updates on upcoming...
On this game, an official announcement just came that this game has been postponed. So any further information will have to come later on. That is all the information that we have right now that has been disseminated from the league to us here inside the arena. And so the Jazz and Thunder will not play the game here tonight. Unfortunately, the game has been postponed.
All is calm. All is well. Difficult job to make that announcement.
Like, literally the opposite is true. The one way to get people not to panic is to say, everything's fine. Don't panic. Just
nothing to worry about.
Yep. Just go on home. I'd be like, what? we actually had talked to the governor of Oklahoma about this in the podcast, and he said, there was a small huddle of, okay, how do we get everyone to leave? And somebody said, should we just pull the fire alarm?
Right.
And he was like, I shouldn't even say that, but because that's the stupidest idea ever. Like, you definitely should not just pull the fire alarm and make everybody run out. But there was a discussion, like, should we have the PA announcer do it? Should we have the owner do it? Should we have Sam Presti do it? Should we have the governor go out? I mean, what would have been more scary?
Yeah, I think, thank God it worked.
Yeah.
Thank God it worked. People exited the arena. I think at that point, don't you think those people in the arena knew what
not
was going
really.
On?
Not really. No.
You don't think so? You think it was just completely blind? Nobody suspected coronavirus?
No, it was not widely reported yet. It took a little while for the reasoning to start coming out. And they this is another funny little bit. So we talked to the guy who was supposed to do the halftime show.
Right.
And he was all warmed up, ready to play the halftime show. And they had actually made him go get not a coronavirus test, but just sort of like, okay, do you have a fever? They scan your forehead and things like that. They called him out and they said, hey, we need you to go on right now. Right. Like, and he goes, but I'm supposed to be the halftime show. And they go, yeah, but we just need you to go on right now where we figure out what to do. So the halftime show guy goes out and performs. Like, he's just randomly doing an act as everybody's trying to leave the arena and keep everyone calm as they're buying time. I mean, it was not an easy situation to figure out on the fly.
Yeah. So I mentioned that I was on the air with Alan Sliwa the night everything went down. And actually, the station tweeted out this link. I didn't realize that this link existed. Our social media team – obviously came in studio and recorded this. But here is what it sounded like with me and Sliwa that night as all this stuff was going down.
NBA announced that a player on the Utah Jazz has preliminarily tested positive for the COVID-19. The test result was reported shortly prior to the tip-off of the game tonight between the Jazz and Oklahoma City. At that time, the game was canceled. The affected player was not in the arena. The NBA is suspending gameplay following the conclusion of tonight's schedule of games until further notice. The NBA will use the hiatus to determine next steps for moving forward in regard to the coronavirus pandemic. That's exactly what I described to you as a possibility, that Gobert had been tested and the results of the test had come in and the medical person ran out to the officials and said, wait a minute. We've got a positive test, and then the game was called off.
Do you know when you saw some of those videos, you know how those videos were coming out just showing that they were suspending the game? You saw the players coming off the court?
Yep.
Do you remember seeing Gobert there?
They said he was not in the facility.
Okay.
They said he was not in the arena. So it sounds like he was separated already and had been tested, and they were waiting for the result. And then once they got the result, that's when that guy came running on the floor and said, hey, wait, hold everything.
All right, this is just the trickle effect is going to come down from here. Scott Van Pelt is on SportsCenter right now. I don't know how they – maybe the part that I don't understand is they're still playing tonight's games?
Well, I mean, once the games are going on
– who'd the Jazz play last?
Toronto. They played Toronto on Monday. By the way, that's a question. It's, you know, it's an asymptomatic virus, which means it can hang around in your system for like 5 days before you show any symptoms. That means that potentially he had the COVID-19 while they were playing Toronto.
Who'd they play a week ago?
Right.
I mean, I'm not trying to cause panic.
What all did he touch in the last 3 days?
I know this has all happened at once. Yep. You know the NBA is scrambling. You know every one of these sports are scrambling right now.
Yep. That was a quick decision on the part of Adam Silver.
How about that?
Just bam. Rudy Gobert test positive, season suspended.
One after the other.
I don't think they
had
any choice. I don't think they had any choice. No.
Pretty good breaking news coverage there.
Yeah, that was all right. Yeah. I got to tell you, Spock was pretty good there, too. He's asking all the right questions.
Yeah, yeah. Spock and the Jock is our pregame show. You get that drift, right? Spock and the Jock. It's Alan Sliwa and Michael Thompson. You know, Sliwa is very analytical. He's a very analytical mind. That's why he's Spock. And, of course, Michael is just Michael. By the way, tomorrow, I want to make sure everybody knows this. Tomorrow, not to take anything away from all of the unbelievable stuff you're giving us right now, Momo, but tomorrow John Ireland returns, and so does Michael Thompson. Lakers back in action tomorrow night.
Nice. Yeah, it's okay. I don't take it personally.
Should you.
It's the Mason and Ireland show. You guys have been on for like 50 years, you know?
27, but sure.
It just feels like 50.
27, but sure. So, I mentioned and we're going to talk to Rob Ninkovich here in a minute, ESPN NFL analyst. But, you know, I was a huge Jared Goff supporter.
I know
well
you were.
Known for this. I was pro-Goff all the way up until I wasn't.
Yeah, and then you really weren't.
Then I really wasn't. So, if you remember... You know, first of all, Jared Goff, we forget this. Jared Goff had 3 really good seasons for the Rams.
Yeah.
I mean, he was very good, obviously. Obviously his rookie year was a throwaway. He went 0-6.
Yeah.
But once McVay got here, had a really good year, had a decent year the following year. They went 9-7, and then, of course, had this year where they did wind up making the playoffs. But I can pinpoint the exact moment when I lost confidence in Jared Goff. And it was the Miami game this year, which the Rams lost 28-17. And he threw his 6th interception in 4 games. Now, remember, he threw 2 interceptions twice, then had a clean game. And I thought, all right, he's okay. He had a couple of bad games. Then he looked awful against the Dolphins. And I said, that's it. He's not the guy. I pinpointed that moment. Now, other people said long before me, not a franchise quarterback, not the guy, can't be the guy that leads your franchise to a championship. Where were you on all that, Momo?
Well, you know, I was trying to be supportive of a Cal guy.
That's right.
Yeah, it was
your alma mater.
I felt like I had to stand by him. And I kept saying, he's done it before. He took the Rams to the Super Bowl. It's in him. He can do it. He just has to get past this whole turnover, fumble thing that he's got. Okay. And I still to this day think, you know, when you've done it once, when you've gotten a team to a Super Bowl once, even if your confidence fades, your game fades, et cetera, like, I still think you can do it again. You still have that in you. That's why I think Carson Wentz, like, you can't completely write those guys off. But the problem for the Rams is that they are built to win now, and they don't have time to wait for him to get it together. And sometimes when a player has lost his confidence, lost his edge, whatever it is, they just need a change of scenery because there's too many bad memories there. It comes back, like the bad stuff comes back, and then all the doubts creep in. Like, you know, a couple weeks ago I had a little bout of insomnia. Have you ever had that where you get the anxiety at night?
No, it's never been my
issue.
I've always been able to sleep.
It's only happened to me once or twice. Like, in college, it happened for about a week or two. And I was like, man, this is terrible. And what happens is the first night or two, there's probably just something keeping you up, you know, some anxiety, something you're worried about. And then it becomes the anxiety that the last two nights you haven't been able to sleep.
Sure.
So then as soon as you
think
it builds
upon itself.
Exactly. Like, you go, okay, I couldn't sleep last night. And then even when I'm winding down and I'm about to go to sleep, I start thinking about it. And I start getting anxious again because I'm afraid that I won't be able to fall asleep again. And then it becomes a thing.
See, I always felt that it's interesting. I always thought that Jared Goff suffers from a long memory as opposed to a short memory.
Right.
Like, once he went south in a game, he was done. And that Miami game was a good example. Two strip sacks, two interceptions, just a brutal, brutal game. And once it started, you knew it wasn't going to get any better.
Right.
And I think that's technically what I think happened. I think that Jared Goff was broken and needed to go somewhere else, and he's in Detroit now to try to fix it. Hey, coming up next for you, Rob Ninkovich is going to join us, ESPN NFL analyst. We'll bounce that off of him. Plus, Matthew Stafford, what does he bring to the Rams? Is Russell Wilson, is there going to be a trade? Really? Does Deshaun Watson go anywhere? All that stuff with Rob Ninkovich coming up next for you, Mason and Ireland, 710.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
ESPN. Momo, dinner last night.
Yeah.
Tell
Went
me.
Over to my place. You know what? You guys got me. I am highly suggestible when it comes to food. So the other week you got me thinking about Honey's Kettle.
Honey Kettle's fried chicken in Culver City.
That night I ordered fried chicken from this place in Chatsworth called Les Sisters. Really good spot. And then yesterday we're talking about Los Toros. And I was like, I want Los Toros.
Yeah,
I'm
some
just
stunt
go over
guy.
And get that.
Some stunt guy at Los Toros laid in a vat of bean dip for 24 hours and got a tattoo on his arm at the same time while wearing a mask and wearing a Los Toros hat. And it was a great stunt, and it pumped up Los Toros.
I will say this though, it was kind of, you know, I realized why I hadn't ordered from there before, because they're not on Postmates, so I hadn't done, and I just, if they don't pop up on Postmates, sometimes I just don't go. So this time I drove over there and I picked it up, and it was like kind of sad because I realized, like, man, this is a spot. This is where everybody, you know, in this area of the valley comes out to eat and drink margaritas and hang out, and it's just like, it's just open for takeout. And I was like, oh man, but the food is still really good. So go there, get some dinner, keep them alive so that we can all go back and drink margaritas again in a few months.
So I want to give a shout out. I was going to say, let's try to pump up another restaurant. I got so many suggestions. So a place called Salsa and Beer in North Hollywood. They say Los Toros definitely has really good bean dip, but man, Salsa and Beer has the best food and the best bean dip. So Salsa and Beer in North Hollywood is one. And then Pinche's Tacos, West Hollywood,
Culver City.
What?
Easy on that. First word.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
P Tacos. Okay, we got
there
it.
There you go.
Believe me.
Yeah.
Even if that's the name of the place?
Well, I when in doubt, leave it out, man.
Yeah. When in doubt, leave it out. You
okay,
heard
well,
that,
we
that
will call
before?
It. Yep. I'm looking at their website and everything, but okay, we'll call it P-Tacos, West yep. Hollywood, Culver City, Westwood Village, and downtown L.A. We are 100% family-owned and operated and are all about our food, simple, authentic, fresh, and high-quality. Recipes are from Jalisco, Mexico. Tortillas are handmade. So
oh,
that's
yeah.
P-Tacos. I really find it hard to believe that I can't say
just
that
say
word.
Just say Inches Tacos. Say it like that.
Inches Tacos.
Yeah, without the P.
Okay. Yeah. Inches Tacos.
Yeah, I'm not even going to say anything because after what I did yesterday.
Oh,
I
saved
it
yesterday,
I can't talk.
Too.
Oh, Momo yesterday just drops the...
didn't even realize. Didn't know.
Instead of, am I the a-hole, you just went, am I
the... I was like, oh, I guess we've said it so many times I didn't realize that you always abbreviate. Yep. My bad.
Always abbreviate that one. Yep. Always abbreviate that one. All right. So I wanted to get to this, and we'll see if we connect with Rob Ninkovich from ESPN coming up here. But Les Snead held a press conference yesterday. And I watched the entire thing on YouTube. Lindsay Theory sent out a link. Let me tell you something. Our friend Lindsay is a big deal, man. Les Snead absolutely pays attention when Lindsay Theory is asking a question. Here is Les on the vision for this offseason and trying to not release players.
What makes this unprecedented, right? We've had to knock on the door of a lot of our key, you know, figures, key pillars, and ask them to, in some cases, make sacrifices, in some cases, adjust their contract to help us get under the cap. And the vision right now is to get to the finish line without having to release players.
So trying to not release players. Now, we've been talking about this. If you're a Rams fan, you know that there are players that they're not going to be able to retain. They've got the third worst cap situation in the NFL as of this moment with $22 million in dead cap money. On the Jared Goff deal. So Leonard Floyd is going to be gone. I'm guessing he's going to go to the Chargers, by the way, and play for Brandon Staley over there. John Johnson, who is a state-of-the-art safety, gone. Mm-hmm. Troy Hill, key part of that secondary, likely gone. Josh Reynolds, who was kind of their deep threat wide receiver, probably gone. Malcolm Brown, who was part of that three-man tandem at running back, potentially gone. Gerald Everett, who was a good pass-catching tight end, potentially gone. So there's going to be a significant amount of turnover with this Rams team. And there's also going to be some shuffling on the offensive line. Andrew Whitworth is coming back. He's 39 years old now and is coming off a really good year. They've got Joe Noteboom as a guy who could conceivably step in and take that job if Andrew Whitworth leaves. And Austin Blythe, who was center last year, is a guy that they're going to try to retain. But there's going to be a ton of turnover this year. So as excited as we are about Matthew Stafford, I think the Rams, Les Snead, they've got to do a bunch of things right. Sean McVay, they have to do a bunch of things right in free agency. By the way, it came out today. They've got two provisional third-round picks. They do well with those third-round picks.
Yep.
And a provisional fourth round pick. And I think what Les's philosophy is on first round picks is that if I can get a proven player, why not make that trade and get that proven guy giving up the number one pick? And it has been really successful as a strategy for them.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting in football now where it's almost like it was for a while there was the cost of doing business. Of just releasing guys and you know, you sign them to a certain deal and everybody kind of understands that you're probably not going to make it to the end of that deal. And the Rams have just done that. Like either they're going to trade those guys, they're going to move them out, whatever it is. But is that what you took from Les saying? Like we're going to try not to have to release guys.
Try not to release guys, try to trade guys. There are rumors, by the way, that Michael Brockers, who's been an important part of the defensive line, could be traded. There were some potentially there's trade talk around Robert Woods. I'd hate to see him go because he makes every tough catch. He and Cooper Kupp both had 100 catches last year.
Yeah.
I'd hate to see Robert Woods go. And they do need a deep threat. They need somebody to take the top off the defense. They did that with Sammy Watson. They did that with Brandon Cooks. Last year, they really didn't have that guy. And they're hoping, I think, Van Jefferson, young wide receiver who they
drafted they like
out
him.
Of Florida, that he could potentially be that guy. But there's also a chance that they go out under the free agency market and find somebody that fits that bill. You know, maybe somebody like Marvin Jones, who played with Matthew Stafford in Detroit. Maybe he's the kind of guy that they look out after. But there are going to be some changes to this Rams roster. And Matthew Stafford, we're incredibly excited about. I think he's going to be a great fit for the Rams, a great fit for Sean McVay's offense. At the same time, as like I said, there's not going to be a lot of margin for error under the salary cap because technically the Rams are over it.
Yeah, it's but in football, almost, you know, in basketball, it's kind of caught up to this too with the buyout market. There's this sense of why would you go trade for an Andre Drummond when, you know, pretty good chance he'll be available as a buyout guy, right? So it feels like football has the same vibe now where they sign these contracts that they never really think they're going to make it to the end of. And you kind of assume that you're going to have a lot of good options on the buyout market or on the trade market towards the end. And the Rams have done a really good job of picking up guys in those situations. I mean, let's go back to Ndamukong Suh a few years ago, right? They just kind of are well positioned to do that.
Leonard Floyd was another guy who was kind of a cast off from the Bears that Brandon Staley had coached there and saw a flash in. And, you know, he was generally considered to be kind of a disappointment until he got to the Rams and ended up, I think, with 9.5 sacks this last year. So it'll be interesting. We're just getting to that time of year. In fact, it's weird watching the press conference. I watched the Les Snead press conference. Uh-huh. It's weird watching it because he's not allowed to mention Matthew Stafford. It's just ridiculous. Allowed to talk about it yet because the league year hasn't started.
God.
I don't think they can talk about it until March the 18th. What an antiquated rule.
Yeah, they're
going
to have to change that. I mean, you know, the NBA did that with the free agency, like they weren't allowed to announce anything during that moratorium period. And they weren't, you know, and everybody for like a week and a half, everything was, you know, really done, but they couldn't talk about it. I was like, this is stupid. Come on, we got to fix that.
Yeah, we got to fix that. All right, coming up next for you, Momo, people like different kinds of music, right? So what would you say your type of music is?
I am all over the place. I like classic rock. I like hip hop, R&B. I'm all over the map.
Okay. Jorge, what is your type of music that you like the best?
Salsa.
Salsa.
Yeah.
Lindsay, what about you?
I'm also pretty eclectic, but I'll go with alternative rock, like 90s rock, I guess.
Okay, alt-rock.
Alt-rock, like 98.7 here in L.A., is a good way to go. It's interesting. They did a survey of people and the music they love. And then they found out who is happiest, who likes their particular music. Did I describe that right? The people that like this particular type of music are happiest. I'll tell you what genre that is coming up next for you. Mason, Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, coming up for you in about 15 minutes, our buddy O'Shea Jackson Jr. is going to ring through. He is on the set of his show in Virginia, the Kevin Durant series, which they've been shooting for a long time now. Apple Plus. So we'll talk to him a little bit about that and get his thoughts on the Lakers as we move into the second half. So I just said the people who listen to this genre of music are the happiest people on earth. No, do you want to take a shot at what it is, Momo?
Gospel?
No. It is heavy metal.
No way. Come on.
Yeah,
heavy
remember
metal.
Remember we did this bit a couple weeks ago, Mace?
No, did we really?
Yes.
Well, we're doing it again.
Yeah, it's new to me.
So, according to the folks at onebuy.com, they found that people who listen to heavy metal are some of the happiest fans on earth. The team recently took to Reddit to examine the language habits of music fans and rank them according to the number of positive words they use in their comments. Turns out, rabid fans of heavy metal, By the way, that's System of a Down.
Right.
The Outcast, the spawns of the doomed, score higher in terms of merriment than almost any other genre except for jazz. Jazz fanatics have more positivity to their form. The authors wrote, metal fans were found to use the second most positive language online. So I've got a little, Momo, just for you, quick lesson on heavy metal. So I'm going to give you a name. You tell me if you think it's a real heavy metal band or if I just made it up.
Got it.
Okay, ready?
Yep.
Code Orange.
That sounds fake.
That is real. Code Orange is a real one.
All right.
You're 0 for 1. Thirsty and Bloody.
Fake.
That is fake. You're right. Yep. The Serial Killers.
Real.
The Serial Killers is not a real band. You're 1 and 2.
Okay.
OJ and the Broncos.
That sounds fake. Come on.
Oh, come on.
That is totally
super fake.
That's funny. That's
what
funny.
A great name for a band.
Funny.
That's a good one.
That's funny.
The Black Dahlia Murder.
I've heard of that, but that's a real murder.
It's a real murder,
fake.
Yes. Is it a real band?
I'm going to say fake.
Oh, that's real. You are now 1 and 4.
Yeah.
Cleviture.
I'll say real.
That is fake, but there is one called Kvelter.
Well, that's what I thought you meant.
Yeah. The last one, Mastodon.
That feels real.
That is real, yes.
Yeah.
So you got a couple in there, but yeah, that's System of a Down playing right now. I can't imagine why heavy metal fans would be happy.
Heavy metal. I'm sorry. We had this girl on our softball team, and she was always trying to get this heavy metal on our warm-up tape. And I was like, no, I cannot listen to that. That is not getting me hyped.
That doesn't pump you up?
No, that makes me want to like bang my head against a wall. Like, ugh.
Oh, heavy metal is great for like working out and like pumping you up. I love heavy metal. Shout out to my best friend, Jeff Talley, who's a huge heavy metal fan. And he got me liking it.
Is Jeff a regular listener?
The closest
I can go. I think he does listen occasionally.
Well, let's give it up for Jeff.
I could kind of go with like Cake, you know, she's going the distance.
Yeah, but Cake is not a heavy metal band.
I know, that's about as far, that's about
Cake
as heavy
is an alt-rock
as I can
band, I would call it.
I know, it's as heavy as I can go. I can't,
who did the
I can't.
Study, Mace?
Something called OneBuy.com.
I like
whatever
how you
the
say
hell
something
is.
Called.
Something called, well, I mean, you know.
You found it somewhere, yeah,
know,
and it was somewhere on the
know how many surveys we run with?
Well, they clearly missed out on
weird.
This. Yeah, see, now that gets you going.
Now this I can put on a mixtape.
Exactly.
Mix
you could yeah. I can do this all day.
Me too, yeah.
When I was in Nicaragua, when I was in El Salvador.
I saw your video.
The,
I saw you dancing.
Yeah, I did learn to dance salsa when I was in El Salvador.
That's right.
One of the yoga teachers was also a salsa instructor. Have you ever salsa'd, Momo?
I have, yeah. It's a really good workout.
It is, yeah.
You know,
it's fun.
Like you just do it for a little while. I mean, I've done it in a club too, but not as well as, you know, I would want to do anything publicly.
Let me ask you a completely separate question.
Yeah.
So there seems to be building talk now.
Mm-hmm.
And I find this really surprising. Building talk that Russell Wilson might really be traded.
I know.
Now, what can Seattle possibly be thinking? I mean, I would put this completely on Pete Carroll and I think it's John Schneider,
the general
manager. I would put it completely on those guys. What could they possibly be thinking? Because there are more and more rumors. The latest one is Russell Wilson to the Bears. He is a state-of-the-art, would you say top 10 quarterback?
Top 5 maybe.
I would say he's a top 10 franchise quarterback.
Easily top 10, maybe top 5. Because we don't even know what he looks like with a real offensive line.
And the moment you trade Russell Wilson, your entire job has got to be to go out and find another one of those.
Right.
Another one of those franchise quarterbacks. And it is not an easy thing. What do you think the breakdown is there?
It must be that he makes too much money and they can't fill out the rest of the team, the rest of the roster, you know, with that salary on the books. It's got to be. I mean, because all he wants is for them to build a better team around him so he's not running for his life out there all the time. That's what it seems like. He wants to stay, would prefer that, but wants them to upgrade the offensive line, which they haven't done for years.
Yeah, Diana Rossini from ESPN is reporting that she believes there is momentum building in the direction of a trade. She says, 2 months ago, I would have told you there is no chance this is happening. But this thing has been picking up steam over the last few weeks. Both sides have done nothing to put this to bed. Russell Wilson has not come out to say that he wants to play for the Seahawks. The coaching staff and front office have done nothing to say that Russell is our guy. The way we've seen around the league, other organizations come out right away and say this is our quarterback. Let's say Mike Mayock and Derek Carr or Dave Gettleman and Daniel Jones. This is our guy. They're not even saying the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think one of the factors is that if you watch Pete Carroll's offense, they are focused on running the football. They are a run-first team. And I think what Russell Wilson wants is a chance to shine. He wants, and by the way, I believe he deserves, after his years in this organization, the opportunity to play in an offense that really shows him off. And he's not that guy right now. They haven't adjusted their offense to make it all about Russell Wilson.
Well, and what's so short-sighted about this is that the reason why they can be a run-first team is because they have Russell Wilson. Like, if you don't have Russell Wilson, they're just going to stack the box. Like, the defense will not just let you run like that. You can only do that because they fear Russell Wilson passing and Russell Wilson scrambling. So you lose him, everything else goes away too. I mean, I feel like trades like this never really work out. I mean, I know the Raiders got away with they traded Khalil Mack, and John Ireland and I were going to quit as fans. And then I just said, no, I can't quit them.
By the way, John Ireland, now that he's not here, I can talk about
him. Yeah.
He is a weak ass Raiders fan.
Yeah. He kind of flips a lot. Yeah. He flips. He flip flops all the time.
He is not a real Raiders fan. I don't care what he says. Not a real Raiders fan. Hang on a second. Dave in Glendale, you're on 710 ESPN. What's up, man?
Hey, so I started listening to heavy metal when I was 13. I saw System of a Down open up for Metallica and Kid Rock and everything. So I got a recommendation for you guys, so Momo will start liking heavy metal. It's a reggae take on Unforgiven. It's a reggae take on Unforgiven by Metallica.
Okay.
It's by Raging FYAH. It's the Unforgiven by Metallica, but it's a reggae take on it.
It's a reggae take.
So if you listen to that, you're going to love a reggae, reggae style.
Thanks for the call, Davis. Jorge,
you guys want to? Yep.
Thanks for the call. So, are you willing to give Metallica a reggae version of Unforgiven a chance, Momo?
I'll listen to anything. I mean, things
surprise me. Jorge is digging it up even as we speak.
Yeah, it's probably good. Yeah, but
hang on a second.
I can barely make out what he said.
It's a reggae version of Metallica's Unforgiven.
All right, let me look.
That's a mix of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like fusion cuisine, you know, like you do like a Filipino and Mexican food. Sometimes it comes out really good.
Yeah. The one metal act that I listen to is I really like Greta Van Fleet. Do you know Greta Van Fleet?
Mm-mm.
She's newer band. She kind of skews a little bit towards alt rock, but she's definitely a hard rock act. My hard rock days are over. Although I'll tell you this. So when I was programming in, let me just tell you a story. So
when is it going to be like one of my stories or one of your stories?
It probably will be a little bit like one of your stories.
Whoa. So, okay. I'm going to buckle in.
So when I was a program director in Toledo, Ohio, we used to not play the hard rock songs during the day because the idea was when you're in an office, you don't want hard rock playing. And I said, oh, screw that. I'm going to play exactly the same. Do we have this?
No, he's playing the old-timey music that we play.
Oh, old-timey music. Okay, got it.
When you have these long stories.
Yeah, these long stories. So I decided I'm going to go ahead and play the rock songs during the day, and it turned out to be the greatest thing in the world. So 12 o'clock noon, 10 o'clock in the morning, Welcome to the Jungle, everything Guns N' Roses, everything Def Leppard. That was sort of the era of when I was a program director, and we just played it in the middle of the day. But in those days, that was considered hard rock.
Yeah.
Now it's very poppy. And now we've got the olden timey music. Do we play the olden timey music every time you tell a story about your past?
We should.
Lindsay?
We should.
Then we should do it for you too.
I think it works here, but I think it's more so for John, because John just tells these same stories over and over.
Well, John does tell.
I tell a lot of old softball stories. You got to have to put in like center field when I tell old softball
this
stories.
John's are like, well, back in my day.
Glory days. They'll pass you by.
I think this segment became beating up John when he's not here.
That's fun.
Raider fan.
I mean, he totally does
same
that
stories
to you when
over
you're not
over.
There. Yeah, I fill in when you're not there, and he does the same thing to you. So I think it's fair game.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right, coming up next for you, our buddy O'Shea Jackson Jr. is going to join us from the set of his brand-new TV show, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.